This week, Does Not Compute is brought to you by Linode. Linode makes it super easy to deploy and manage SSD servers in just seconds. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of Linode, but what you might not know is that they recently introduced some great pricing updates. Now you can get a 1GB Linode server for only $5 a month. And their high memory plans start at just $60 a month for a 16GB server. This is really awesome pricing, and actually about half the cost of what most Linode competitors charge for the same amount of RAM. Linode doesn't skimp on other specs either. All servers run on native SSD storage and Intel E5 processors over a 40 gigabit network. Of course, you still get full access to your servers, which means you can run just about anything you want on them. A GitLab instance, Docker containers, a VPN server, or whatever else you can dream up. Once you've got your new servers up and running, Linode also has add-on tools to help you manage them, like automated backups, load balancers, and system monitoring utilities. Linode has a special offer for Does Not Compute listeners. If you head to linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the promo code DoesNotCompute2017, all one word, they'll load your account up with $20 in credit. That's enough credit to run your own 1GB server on Linode for 4 months. This is a great deal. So make sure to check out Linode today by visiting linode.com/doesnotcompute.
You know what? It doesn't even feel like it's been the weekend. It doesn't feel like there's any peace in my world.
No. I have no sense of the day of the week. This is like my only recurring responsibility, I guess. We have like two status meetings for half an hour to an hour, two times a week. We have a status meeting two times a week, rather. Two status meetings total. And then other than that, I just work.
Just work. Yeah. That's about what I've been doing. I mean, I leave the house like a couple times a week. It's all right.
Outside. What it's all right.
Oh, it's been snowing, so I don't go out there when it's snowing because I did my time in the snow. I grew up in the snow, so I don't have anything to do with it. It has nothing to do with me. And that's how we live my life now.
You stay away from each other and everybody's happier.
Yeah. Well, it helps shovel sometimes because there's an elderly couple that lives downstairs. And so I help them shovel their path and stuff like that. But otherwise, I stay away from it. Yeah. But I just kind of stay inside and I write JavaScript and I watch Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and I play guitar and then I write some Ruby and or Elixir and repeat.
Yeah. You've been getting a lot more into Elixir, right? Your little side project you're working on right now is the back end is all Elixir, yeah?
Yeah. It's
Is that a public thing? Like can we say the name is I don't know what the rules
are.
Yeah,
it's Watch Nature. It's actually open source. So if anybody cool. that hears this knows Elixir, help me. help me make decisions and do things properly. So the bit like most people that have done Rails work, they hear Elixir and they're like, oh, that's what everyone Rails is jumping ship to. Or conversely, if you go to an Elixir hangout, an Elixir joint, a lot of people that you will be talking to are coming from Rails specifically, which I think is interesting. But in my mind, I'm trying to not treat them the same at all because Phoenix is not Rails and it doesn't try to be Rails. So that was really an interesting thing starting because I have a little bit of Node experience, but most of my server-side language experience has been Ruby and with Rails. So in anything I knew that I learned, I'm going to be approaching with that lens, and it's been really tough to get rid of that lens.
Yeah, sure. It's crazy how intertwined those two communities are. I mean, even at I went to RailsConf last year, 2016, and there were so many talks, like a good probably 10% at least of the talks were actually about Elixir and Phoenix.
Yeah, it's funny because when you search, like if you go to YouTube and you search for an Elixir talk, it's going to be, most of them are from either the Elixir conference or any number of Rails conferences. So earlier this morning, actually, I was watching a video on Ecto and I believe it was actually coming from a Rails conference talk, which I thought was kind of funny. But it's different, you know. I'm trying to approach it differently. I'm trying to not think of like how would I do this in Rails and then try to write Rails via Elixir. And it's been challenging, but I think it's also been good too because when I learn new concepts, it helps me kind of equate like how I would do that in Rails. So it's different, right? Because I'm approaching it in how do you do this idiomatic way with Elixir? And then in my mind, I automatically connect it back to something that I know, which would be like Ruby and Rails. But I'm not trying to approach it from the other side where I only know how to do this in Rails. So I'm going to try and do it this way, if that makes sense. So it's been a good learning experience so far. I mean, it's been, I won't say it's been super easy. You know, it hasn't been, but I think it's rewarding because it's something completely new, you know, and it's teaching me new concepts. I'm having to learn new things. And it's also, I think it's helping me as a Rails developer because I am learning more. I'm getting more outside world experience, so to speak.
So are you far enough in to have like things that you like or dislike about the ecosystem yet or the language or anything in particular?
It's not even really having to do with, this is more of an ecosystem thing, but it's moving pretty quickly. Like Phoenix releases are coming out, like 1.3 is around the corner, which is a pretty big change. Now it's not like fundamental changes to the framework. It's a lot of like organizational differences. And so it's in a release candidate phase. So I'm kind of stuck in my mind, like, okay, I know it's an RC, you know, there shouldn't be anything major changed about this. Do I want to start switching my project over to using that structure, or do I just stick it out? And I chose to stick it out with 1.2.1 right now because there are docs, purely because there are documentation. There's documentation for it.
Are the new docs not really up to snuff yet?
They're not like public. Like you can get to them. You can get to them through GitHub and stuff like that. But if I'm getting stuck on something, I don't want to have to dig because then I'm having to split my cognitive load. So yeah, I'm sticking with 1.2. And really the big changes between 1.2 and 1.3 is that they're trying to get rid of some of the quote unquote magic. So a lot of people were comparing it to Rails because there's a web folder, right? So in the root of a project, you have like lib, you have deps, which is similar to like node modules or something like that. And then you have this web folder, and that's where all your web code goes. And
what is web code? I don't know. That seems a little
like controllers, models, you know, things that would be your web application, I suppose.
Is that sort of like the equivalent of the app folder in Rails then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's an app folder in the root, and that's where all of your stuff goes. You know, aside from any lib tasks that you're creating or things like that. And so that's why a lot of people, I think, were comparing Phoenix and Rails directly because there was this web folder and that's all your web stuff went, you know, your migrations, your models, your controllers and all that stuff. And so when you're jumping into Elixir, every Elixir project has the same structure. And Elixir uses a tool called Mix. So you could do like Mix new project name and it would spit out an Elixir project. And so that gives you basically a boilerplate setup. And then all of your application code goes in the lib folder. So if we were making a Watch Nature app, it would be like lib and then watchnature.ex, and then all of your other application code would go in there as well. So Watch Nature would be like your main entry point for your app. And so Phoenix 1.3, what they're doing is they're moving that magic web folder into the lib folder. And so basically a Phoenix project then becomes an Elixir project. It just happens that there are lots of modules that you can use that are predetermined and predefined. And another big thing that they're doing is they're encouraging you to separate your actual business logic from your web stuff. So you would, in your web folder, you would have your, you know, you'd have controllers and things like that, controllers, views, things that are more for the actual web application. But outside of that web folder, you would actually have your schema files, your business logic files, your model files, stuff like that. So they're trying to separate the web from the business logic, and they're trying to encourage more of like an umbrella project approach. So that way you have an Elixir project, and then inside of the lib folder, you can have many different little application folders that are separate from each other, like little microservices.
Yeah,
and then your web folder is what ties that all together. So your controllers would grab whatever data it needs and format the response that it needs to give to the client. And so that way, you have little microservices in the same project structure. It's managed via the same processes and all that stuff. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to think about organization. They're trying to get you to think about organization, even in how you're building your tables, how you're building your schema, how your data works together, instead of just tossing everything into web models, because that's like the go-to place. Is if it's like a one-off module that needs to do something, just drop it in models. That's where it'll go, you know. And that's what a lot of people do with Rails as well. And you know, now we have some more like service folders and things like that. But a lot of people, they just create a ton of bare classes essentially, and they just drop them in the models folder, and that's fine, you know. But Elixir is not it's not an object oriented language; it's functional, and so they're trying to encourage new people to approach it with that paradigm in mind, and not so much of an object oriented. Let's throw all of our classes. Elixir doesn't even have classes; it just has modules. Instead of throwing them all in one directory, they want you to kind of split it up and organize it.
Sure. I mean, really, it just sounds like these changes are being done just to make it more Elixir-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was a thing.
And as sort of the way that Rails is set up, where it tries to be, for the most part, it doesn't always succeed at this, but it tries to be fairly Ruby-ish in the way that it approaches things.
Correct. Yep. And I watched the Chris McCord is one of the people that created Phoenix, if not the creator of Phoenix. I think at Lone Star, I can't remember exactly the name of the conference, but then part of the name is Lone Star. And so he was talking about Phoenix 1.3, and that's what he was saying, is that the way that 1.2 is set up is it encourages people to write code in a way that's not scalable and maintainable down the road. So, you know, if you have a controller and you need to say like, oh, well, when you create a post, it needs to always just have a current, like it needs to be assigned to a user. You could just do that assignment in the controller, but you probably shouldn't do the assignment in the controller. And so the way 1.2 was set up was it was kind of making it easy for people to do that. And so they're moving away from that approach because someone that doesn't do a lot of work in trying to understand idiomatic Elixir will just kind of take advantage of that. And then a year down the road, they're going to be like, crap, you know, refactoring is tough because everything's just in these massive controllers and that's not how it should be.
Right. I mean, that's, I think, something everybody who has learned Rails on their own is kind of guilty of and very familiar with. I know that I did that a lot when I was starting out with Rails. Just like have way, way too much controller logic. And now I write like, you know, 2, 3, 4 line methods in my controllers most of the time, which is, it's a world of difference how much better that is.
Yeah, you just delegate to your classes. You make your classes to handle one thing, you know, and then you just delegate to those, and that's how it should be.
Got those objects, use them.
Yeah, exactly. And with Elixir, I mean, we don't have, you know, we don't really have objects. I guess you can use structs and things like that. So you just pass data around, and really it's at first it's kind of, it was throwing me off. Right. And so what I ended up having to do is take a step back and think to myself, oh, I know how to build an app. I've done it. So what I need to do is familiarize myself with terms so that I'm not so taken aback every time I look at something and don't know what this means or don't know how to approach it, because the underlying concepts are the same, you know? So that's what I've been doing is thinking, okay, how would I implement this? Like not even in Rails, but like as an application architecture, how would I build this? And then I'll start Googling. And one thing that Elixir does have going for it is the documentation is incredible. Documentation is like a first class citizen with Elixir. It's actually really cool. I'll have to read up some more so I can talk more intelligently about it. But for pretty much any package I've used in the Elixir ecosystem has some sort of generated output. It's all uniform and it's incredibly, it's just easy to use. So that's been one of my favorite things about Elixir, is that it's just easy to learn because the documentation is so well put together.
So I'm actually really curious. You're using Phoenix in the Watch Nature project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what was the reasoning behind going with the Elixir Phoenix ecosystem there? Was it just something where you were like, I want to try this out, or does it have specific things that are going to be helpful with Watch Nature in particular?
Yeah. So part of it was, you know, I've done a little bit of Elixir in the past. I've gone through I've gone through some like code exercises and cones and stuff like that. And I don't really want to say that I'm building this out in Phoenix because it's like the trendy thing to do. Cause that's really not why I chose that. The biggest reason was that in Watch Nature and how Brady is designing it and some of the features, there's lots of real-time data happening, lots of real-time updates happening. And, you know, Rails has Action Cable, which makes it a lot easier to do that out of the box. But I've heard really, really good things about Phoenix in the sense that that is kind of what it was made for, real-time connections and communications.
Right. It's a first-class thing versus a bolt-on.
Yeah, exactly. It's a first-class thing. And another big part of that is you'll hear a lot of people talk about performance. Oh, performance is so great in Phoenix. And I said it like that because, okay, yeah, performance can be good, but it can also be bad depending on how you make things. Just because you switch to something doesn't mean it's going to be fast, you know? So another big part of why I wanted to try it out was because if you do things right, Phoenix can be incredibly fast. It can be very fast and very efficient and very RAM efficient in handling real-time communication because that's what it was made for. So I thought to myself, you know, I want, you know, Watch Nature to be a long-term thing. I want to be working on it for a long time. And I like the idea a lot. So I could build the original version out in Rails because I'm comfortable with it and that's what I know. Or I could try to stretch myself a little bit and pick something like Phoenix because concurrency and performance with concurrency is a first class citizen and just use that approach, knowing that down the road there's room for growth and improvement. And so that's the decision that I made. So at first I was kind of building them in tandem. And then I just switched to the Phoenix project full time.
So I think you had a pretty good point there about using the right tool for the long term. And I'm sort of feeling that same way with Rails right now. I don't know. I at this point in time, I can't really picture myself ever writing another Rails app that actually serves up a front end, that actually serves up a web interface. I am after doing this whole thing for Nest Notes with Webpack and just having an API only Rails setup. Man, that is a lovely way to write apps.
It's nice.
It's really like, good.
Once you get over the hump, because I know it's a whole thing, like the Webpack front end spa is a whole thing. Like once you get over the hump, it's very nice. So I'm doing the same thing for Design Collective. You know, I talked to my boss and I said, hey, listen, I think this is important. I'm going to spend an hour to an hour and a half every day working on a brand new version of the front end. It's going to be decoupled. I explained what I think the benefits were of doing that. And she was like, go for it. So that's what I'm doing. So I find that my first hour and a half of the day is awesome because it's just a nice workflow. And then the rest of my day is like, I would wish I was working on this other thing.
Well, you'll get there. You'll get there. It's amazing how much better it is, though. It is just such a lovely way to work. I'm using active model serializers, so I have like that translation layer, which kind of takes the place of like in other apps you might use like a presenter or something like that. But mm-hmm. since I'm not actually generating the front end, I just change my serializers around if I need to output different data there, and then it's just. That's just what the new API is like. It's wonderful, Sean. It's so good.
Yeah,
I'm very happy. I'm very happy that Rails seems to be moving more in that direction as well. Like with the 5.1, I believe there's going to be native Webpack support. And so I'm very excited for that, to see that Rails is continuing to grow and evolve with these new techs.
If I remember correctly too, I think there's even a flag for choosing React or Vue setup as well.
Is it really? Jeez.
I'm pretty sure. I don't think I'm nuts. I could be, but I'm pretty sure I saw that, which is pretty awesome. So I, you know, a lot of people, especially going into like Phoenix chat rooms and Phoenix forums and stuff like that, a lot of people will hate on Rails and things like that. But I think Rails is still still a great platform. I still enjoy it. Like when I'm working on my Rails stuff, I don't wish I was working on my Elixir stuff. I'm not thinking to myself, this is terrible. It's still a great platform. And I think that a lot of the performance things can be kind of, especially, you know, since you're not even using the view layer. And I think that's where a lot of like RAM gets used up, a lot of time gets spent is compiling those views on every request. And so I think that, you know, for example, Knife Foundation is running on Rails and they have hundreds of thousands of views. And we have zero problems with RAM usage, zero problems with response times. We have no problems at all. It's just as fast as ever.
Yeah, Rails is reasonably quick at just spitting out JSON. It's like, it's not bad at all.
No, it's not bad
when
at all.
When it really does get slow is when you're doing a lot of view rendering stuff. And that's just not a concern when you're building apps out like this.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's another reason why that I wanted to check out Phoenix was that It does some other things in, newer is not a good way to say it. It's just different, especially Elixir being a compiled language. It compiles into, you know, if people aren't familiar, it compiles down into bytecode and it runs on the Erlang VM. And so one place that Elixir or Phoenix rather specifically gets a performance boost is that when it is built, it compiles all of the templates into strings. And so when you're building a server rendered Phoenix app, it doesn't have to do that in every request like Rails does. It just interpolates the strings and serves it out. So that's why it's so fast. And people are like, oh, the performance is so great. But a lot of people don't necessarily talk about like why it's so great. It's just different. It's just different technology.
So you talked a fair bit about like Phoenix itself, which for anybody who doesn't know, Phoenix is like the Elixir equivalent of Rails. And so you talked about Phoenix a fair bit, but not actually about Elixir as a language. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I like it. So you're going to see, if you Google it, you'll see lots of articles like a general introduction to Elixir for Rubyists and things like that. And you'll hear, you know, you might hear people say in passing like, oh yeah, Elixir looks a lot like Ruby, but it's not like Ruby at all beyond what the syntax looks like. And so that was interesting to get used to. But once you kind of get used to it, I went through like Elixir cones, and I tried the codeschool.com Elixir course, and it all made it click. But one of the coolest features I think that Elixir has is called pattern matching. What's really interesting is that the equal sign isn't just for assignment, it's more for comparing in Elixir. So what's really cool is that you can send a map. A map is just a key value list, basically. You can send a map in to a method, and then you could assign, you can basically destructure it, kind of like you can do in ES6. So you can basically make a bunch of variables on the left, pass in a map on the right, and Elixir will just do the matching for you. So it'll just go through and zip them together. But not only does it do that, you can also pattern match against responses. So for example, Ecto is, it's not an ORM, but it's what you would use to basically construct SQL queries in Elixir. And so what you can do is you could do like a repo insert thing, and then you could key off of that. So you could do case result, and then you could say, does it equal a tuple with okay result? And if it does, do the thing. Does it equal error result? Do something else. So basically you can match whatever you send to something, get whatever you want from it, and then do whatever you need to do with that information. So because of that, you never really find yourself writing lots of if else statements. Actually, I don't even think I've written one since I've been writing Elixir. It's all just pattern matching, and then using something like a case if you need to handle multiple cases in doing that.
Man, every time I look at these pipes, I do get a little jealous, I gotta be honest.
The pipes are nice. Yeah. So if people aren't familiar with pipes, it's basically like a Unix pipe. So you have a thing that returns data, and then you put a pipe character, and then you have another function, and it takes an input and it pipes it through a chain. Think functional programming, because Elixir is a functional language. So you just put something into the pipe, the chain, and then it just comes out the other side. And it's great. It's super nice to use. And that's another thing that I really like about it. You can make some really beautiful, maybe is a silly word to use, but you can just make some really nice looking code, like really easy to understand by doing that. You don't have lots of parentheses hanging around. You're not passing lots of arguments into stuff. But yeah, between the pattern matching, between the pipes, I mean, those are kind of the glamour features that everyone talks about. I really enjoy the way that maybe more the conventions of working with that data. So I've never really used a language that has like tuples. I've never really used a language that had actual lists with like heads and tails and stuff like that. But I think I really like the way that they work with data. So I mentioned, you know, pattern matching against a response from inserting something into the database with Ecto. And most times when you're doing something like that, it's going to return a tuple, and it's either going to be okay with whatever was inserted, a struct, or it's going to be like an error tuple, an error atom, which would be like a symbol in Ruby. It'll be an error atom with whatever response, like a message or a map or something with errors. And that's always the case. It's always consistent. So to me, working with data feels really nice, because it's always going to be okay, and then the data you need, or it's going to be result and the message that you need. So handling those cases becomes really simple.
Is that so? I guess maybe I'm not totally understanding there. So like if I was using Rails in Active Record, I would just do if thing.save else.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent in Ecto, but I guess I'm just wondering like what specifically makes that nicer to use.
Well, I mean, that was one example. So if you're building up your own, class, like say you're working with an external API, you're going to format your data to be consistent when it comes back. Other people won't know this. Maybe I can post some screenshots, but like when I showed you some screenshots of how I was working with the EasyPost API in my Rails app for Design Collective, all of the responses from the EasyPost class, I run it through like a formatting method. So the responses are always the same. It's going to have an okay or an error. And then it's going to have, if it's okay, it's going to have the rates array. And if it's not okay, it's going to have an error message. So I know anywhere I'm using that class, the response is always going to be the same, no matter what comes out of it, if it's okay, if it's an error. It's more uniform, I guess, in my mind.
Okay. So you're just talking more about consistency in general, not so much consistency in your specific ORM. It's more like when you're talking to external services or when you have some sort of setup to
exactly
normalize data. You just like that pattern. That makes more sense.
Right. Yeah. I like the pattern. It's more consistent. It's more of like this is just how things are done in Elixir. I guess more specifically, it came from Erlang, you know, so that's just how things are done. And so you just do things that way. You kind of like Elixir is really big on following contracts. So it has this thing called plug, and there are two types of plugs. There's like a function plug or a module plug. And for something to be considered a plug, it takes a connection object and options, and it will always return that connection object. It's just modified slightly. So your plugs are basically just a chain of things that takes the connection, changes it, and returns it in some way. And the contract is always the same. So when you see that something is a plug, you know how it's going to work. You know what goes in, you know what comes out.
Sure. So that's like a contract sounds like what would be called an interface in other languages, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, you know, Elixir being the first language that I've really used that is really big on that. You know, I'm sure Ruby has some stuff like that as well, but no one really pushed that on me. Whereas in Elixir, it's like a fundamental thing.
Yeah, that's always interesting. I feel like interfaces are such a massive part of certain languages and just non-existent in others, and everybody still seems to be doing just fine.
Yeah, and what's interesting for me is I find that those rules, those interfaces, those like contracts that you abide by, they help me a lot because it's a question that I don't have to answer. Someone else already answered it for me. So I can just do what I'm doing and just use it. You know, it takes away some of the, I'm not really sure how to implement this feature, or I'm not really sure what to do when I get this data back. And I find that in Ruby and Rails, I've had that a little bit, not so much Rails, but like when I'm writing like Poro classes or something like that, I kind of had this ambiguity. Like I didn't really know what to return. I didn't know how to handle certain cases. But with Elixir, when you're writing plugs, the answer is there. There's a contract and you follow the contract and that's it.
Pretty cool. Thanks again to Linode for sponsoring today's episode of Does Not Compute. Linode provides painless SSD cloud servers starting at only $5 a month for a 1 GB server. You can spin up new boxes in just seconds and run just about anything you want on them. Check out linode.com/doesnotcompute to learn more. And if you sign up with the promo code doesnotcompute2017, all one word, you'll get $20 in account credit. Make sure to check out Linode today by visiting linode.com/doesnotcompute.